So glad you're all here this morning. And I'm thrilled. I got a couple surprises here today and so excited for what we have going on, and you're in for a treat. So we'll get there as we move along this morning, but I want to invite you to turn, if you have your Bibles, to Genesis chapter 1. And we are in this season of Lent. This is our third week of Lent, and one of the things that I absolutely love about Lent, I don't know if you can, if love and Lent go in the same sentence together, but the fact that we all get to remember this season of Lent with all of our Christian brothers and sisters around the world, to me, is just, there's so much solidarity there to know that what we are talking about, some of these themes, some of these ideas that we're talking about here, we're not alone. But there's people all around the world who are reflecting on these very same ideas. Because Lent is a season of preparation. It's a time in which we prepare our hearts, we prepare ourselves to receive resurrection. And so during this season, during these 6 weeks, we're looking at our smallness. We're being reminded of the truth that, yes, we're dust. We're talking about our frailty, which I understand. Some of those topics might be a little uncomfortable. Those aren't the things that we normally bring up around the dinner table. But this is a season to remind us of our dependence upon God, our dependence upon a source that is beyond ourselves for the very breath that we take, for this gift of life that we've been given. And so we started a couple of weeks ago here by looking at a prayer by one of the psalmists. So Psalm 90:12, his prayer that he was offering, "Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom." And we said that this was to be our prayer here during this season of Lent. This is a prayer asking for wisdom. This is a prayer that is grounded in humility. This is a prayer where this psalmist is asking God, how do I best invest my life? How do I use this breath that I've been given in a way that connects me deeply with who I've been created to be? And so we said that this was going to be our prayer here, because the question that this prayer raises is a question for us a couple of thousand years later. Isn't that interesting how this works? Where there's a prayer that's offered a couple, maybe two, three, four, however many thousand years ago, yet it is still relevant for us in our world today. Because the question at the heart of this prayer is, how do I truly live and embrace this life that I've been given? Which I don't know about you, but this is a question that I'm asking all the time. How do I embrace, fully embrace and live and experience my life? So this morning, I thought what we would do is we would start all the way back in the beginning at Genesis. Because the beginning sounds like a good place to start, does it not? So often we get so caught up. We find ourselves in the middle of the story, but we forget how the thing all began. And so what I want to do is I want to look to the beginning of Genesis to see this wisdom that Genesis offers about how we can live truly connected with who we were created to be. So Genesis chapter 1, we're going to start in verse 26. And here's the thing. So the Bible begins with a poem. Genesis 1 is a poem. And this poem begins by talking all about creation. It talks about the creation of mountains and lakes and rivers and streams. It talks about the land being separated from water. It talks about mountains. It talks about trees. It talks about plants. We move into vegetation. And then all sorts of different animals. And then we get to the creation of humanity. And so the poet tells us here in verse 26, "Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals and over all the creatures that move along the ground." And so God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Now, in the ancient world, the time in which Genesis was written, there was only a few select people who had this image of God. It was the kings. It was the rulers. That's how they were able to rule, because they told all the people, "We have been given the image of God. We are to be the representation of God here on the earth. So all you minions must follow along and do exactly what we say, because we have been granted divine status." So when we get to this poem here in Genesis, what we find is something completely subversive, revolutionary, and progressive. Yes, the Bible is extremely progressive. The Bible is way ahead of its time. The Bible is always moving us forward into greater love and complexity and depth. And we see that right here in the beginning of Genesis, because not just the king, it's not just these kings that have this divine image, but rather it's every single human being. All of humanity has been granted this divine image. We start the story in the beginning with this immense value and infinite worth that is birthed into every single individual. This is how the Bible begins. This is how we start the story of God's intent for humanity. That every single one of us, every single human who has breath, would be a representation of God here on this earth. Now, we're then told, well, because of this divine image that you've been birthed with, you can go and you're to go and rule over and subdue the earth. And I get it. Sometimes we read that and we're like, oh, great, I can do whatever I want to do with the earth. We can exploit it. We can strip it bare. We can use all of its resources. And who cares what happens to the earth? Because, well, it's our God-given right. We're the ones who are meant to rule over this thing. It was given to us. So who cares what happens to the creation? But what if we were to understand the story a little differently? What if we were to understand that we were given responsibility, that this God-given image that we were given, it was actually a great responsibility given by God to us in order to be caretakers and stewards, ensuring that all creation was able to multiply and increase? What if we were to take seriously our God-given responsibility to truly seek after the flourishing and the mutual well-being of all creation and all of our fellow image bearers? See, this seems to be exactly what Genesis is up to. Where what we find here right in the beginning is God saying, "I have given you power. I'm actually giving you some of my power. And with that power comes great responsibility to look after and care for the beautiful earth that you've been placed in." And so when we begin here, where we see God's intent for humanity, yes, it has implications for how we treat the creation. Pollution, waste disposal, how we get our energy, how we get our food. But this also has great implications for how we treat each other. And not just the people that we like, not the ones who look like us, not the ones who believe all the same things that we believe, but rather how we treat and seek after the well-being of every single human being on this planet. This is the revolutionary message that Genesis begins with. Yes, I've given you this power. I've given you this responsibility in order to seek after the mutual flourishing and well-being of every single thing that is here on the earth. So maybe we could say this, that being a Christian simply means that we are to use our lives, that we're to use all that we've been given in order to seek after the flourishing of all people and of all creation. And I think, very sadly, that dominant Christian message has been pushed aside in favor of focusing on more seemingly important heavenly pursuits. And I think it's a really sad reality that we see within the church, where when we are spending all of our time, energy, and focus trying to escape here in order to go somewhere else, we actually abdicate, we resist, we refuse our God-given destiny to care for this earth, this planet, and every single person that we share this rock with. I think actually that sometimes we miss out on what it means to be human. We miss out on what it means to actually be the people that we were created to be when we become so focused on escaping and leaving that we neglect all that we see in front of us, that we refuse the beauty that is infused within this creation. Are you with me? Right here in the beginning of Genesis, we're told, this is what it means to be human, to use your responsibility to care, to guide this creation forward into God's beautiful plan for all things. Now, there's all sorts of implications. We could talk for many different weeks about what this means, what this looks like, and I understand a lot of us, we have all different passions and skills and talents and things that we truly care about. What I want to do this morning is I want to bring up a friend of mine who I met a couple of weeks ago, and I believe that he beautifully embodies this idea of truly caring for all people here, people who are often neglected, people who are often pushed to the sides, pushed to the margins. And many of you know Mary. Mary's been with us for a while. Her husband, Tony Hillary, is here with us this morning, and he is the founder, he is the executive director of an organization called Harlem Grown, which is in Harlem, in case you were wondering. Just trying to make connections here for everyone. And he is such an inspiration. I got a chance to talk with him and then go down and see everything that he's doing down in Harlem, and it just blew me away. And he inspires me to continue doing what I do here, of encouraging all of us to truly care for our global neighbors and care for the people who others have forgotten about. And so I want to bring Tony up here, share a little bit about his story, share some statistics to give you all a clearer picture of how he is seeking the flourishing and well-being of all people in our area. So with that, Tony Hillary.
Good morning, guys. Thank you for having me. David summed it up pretty simply. I just want you guys to bear with me for a little bit, because this is my personal journey, okay? It's really nothing special. I'm just a storyteller, but listen to the story, okay? Mary and I were blessed in life. We did pretty well. I started my own business, and we did pretty well. We moved to Riverdale, have a beautiful apartment. We have three adult children now who all went to private school, kindergarten to college, never stepped foot in a public school in their life. And I, like many people today, I kind of had it wrong. I was thinking that you got to earn, you got to get, you got to get. I was working like a lunatic. We did pretty good. But to amass all of this stuff, I missed all my kids' birthdays, all of their graduations. Thanksgiving and Christmas were my peak days in my business. There was a plate for me at the table that I wasn't there. I was working. And that's something you never get back. But then, a blessing and a curse. 2010, 2011, the financial crisis hit me like everybody else. And I'm sitting in my house, depressed. You know, we have our personal pity parties. I'm not making tons of money anymore. Poor me. And Mary would go to work and leave me on the couch, come home from work, and I'm still on the couch. And this is the routine. That's depression, if you didn't know. But I kept reading about schools, and I kept seeing on the news, and I'm reading about schools in South Bronx, Brooklyn, Harlem, all these areas. And before I continue, please, this is not black, white, or brown. I just happen to work in Harlem. This is poor. We're talking poverty now. I just want to be clear about that. It's very easy to put a face to poverty, but I just happened to be there. So one day, I don't know what compelled me, but I had to get off the couch. So I look at a subway map, and the 2 and 3 train stopped right on 135th and Lenox. I got off, and lo and behold, there's a school right there. I didn't know what I was doing. I just had to get out of the house. So I walk into this school. Now, please, I dropped out of high school, okay? I failed upwards, all right? I was lucky. I walk into this school, and I say, I'm here to see the principal. Principal came out. Yes, sir, how could I help you? I said, well, I'm here to help. And she said, help with what? I never even thought it through. Remember, this is personal reasons. I had to get out. So I said, I want to work with parents. I want to teach these parents the importance of education to break the cycle of poverty. She said, oh, really? Okay. She introduced me to the parent coordinator. He and I had a cup of coffee. He slapped me on the back and said, all right, go get them, Tiger. So now I have a purpose. So when Mary goes to work, I go to work. I'm going to this school every day. I'm in front of this door, and I'm like the cheerleader greeting these children. You know, good morning, how you doing? Welcome. Chatting up the parents. 3 weeks in, a young single mother came up to me. She had two young kids in the school. She looked like a kid herself. She walked right up to me and said, Mr. Tony, why do you sweat this education? I ain't got one, and I'm doing great. Her definition of great was living in the project, Section 8 housing, welfare, and food stamps. And as much as I can talk, I was speechless, because how do you respond to that? How do you answer that statement? You can't, without being insulting or condescending. So of course I quit. I went back home, I'm telling Mary about the day and the 3 weeks, and as I'm replaying those 3 weeks, the way the children in that school received me, you'd have thought I knew them all from birth, all 400 kids. Every day I walk in there, I was bigger than Barack Obama. And I'm like, what's going on? So then I started paying attention and asking questions. 80% of the children there live in a single-parent household. 92% live below poverty. 98% are on food stamps. 42% of these children are homeless. Homeless. We're talking New York City, the richest city in this country. Then where I'm standing, in this school, 134th, between Lenox and Adam Clayton, we have 11 homeless shelters in a 4-block radius. Shrink it in a block, in a 3-block radius, we have 54 fast food restaurants, 29 pharmacies, not one affordable food option in a 3-block radius. Just think about those numbers, and remember, 98% of these families are on food stamps. And we have a national dialogue on healthy nutrition. All these catchphrases that we have, let's move, let's do this, let's do that. Easy said, very hard to do. The schools I'm working in, there is no art, there is no music, there is no gym. The children we work with come to school for reading, writing, and arithmetic, and breakfast, lunch, and supper. They have their 3 meals in school, yet they can't identify food. So, of course, now I pivoted. I quit the parents. I don't want to say quit, but I quit, because I'm not a quitter, but I couldn't dent that. So now I focus on these children. Ladies and gentlemen, let me just tell you something. Children are amazing. I have 3 adult children, like I said. When I go home, I'm dad. It's like, dad's home. I go there, I'm Mr. Tony. I tell you, it is the most amazing thing you've ever seen. And these children, unfortunately, a lot of people refer to them as those children. Those people. These are children. And I'm not here to talk about politics or anybody's view or anything. Even if you subscribe to the rhetoric of that, those people are this, those people are that, I'll give you that, okay? I don't agree with it, but I'll give it to you. What about the children? What about the children? All they were born. They're in this. So leave it alone, guarantee you they're going to repeat. So here we are now. I'm working with these children in this lunchroom. I don't know why the lunchroom, but I just decided to go hang out in the lunchroom. Two lunch periods, 200 kids per lunch period. And it's bedlam, as you can imagine. It is crazy. Kids are hopped up on Doritos and Pepsi for breakfast. And just no outlet. It's just crazy. Just for context, when I went to this one school, they average 8 to 14, quote unquote, fights a week in the lunchroom. Now, to classify them as fights is easy because that's how they monitor these things in the Department of Education. But to classify them as, quote unquote, fights makes it seem to us that these children are predisposed to violence. They are not violent, but they are scared, angry, confused, and hungry with no outlet. No social workers, no guidance counselors. What do they get in school? Their three meals, test preparation, and discipline. This is what these children are getting. This is the cycle. This is the cycle. And it's so easy for us to see and read these stories and say, wow, that's horrible. But then we turn the page to the next horrible story. But this is where I work every day. And I have to tell you, these children are just as smart, creative, and capable, and loving as my children. But poverty, ladies and gentlemen, is just one thing, two things actually, lack of access and lack of opportunity. As we sit here, everybody in here has been surrounded by some degree of success in their life. It's not an accident we get where we are. You have either your mom and dad, or you have your uncle, you have your grandpa. Wealth, 80% of wealth is inherited, 80%. All right, we like to think of ourselves as extraordinary and we're special and we're that, but we're not. We're recipients of extraordinary situations. Think about that. All right, what about the children I serve? 80%, just mom. And of those 80% of those mothers, 92% have a high school education at best. So if you think about long term, how does that mom prepare those children for college? Talk to the children in my school about college. The little ones look at you and say, what's that? And the big ones look you right in the eye and say, why? Why go to college? That's my work. So, long story short, what do I do now? So I started recycling in the lunchroom just to get some order. After about a week of the kids wanting to join me and help me, we went from 8 to 14 fights a week to zero. Principal said, what are you doing? I said, nothing. I'm engaging them. So that's how it all started. And then just one day, I do this thing called table hopping. Every kid wants you for 10 seconds of just connection. And this little girl sat by herself every day. Her mother didn't want her to eat the school food, if you want to call it food. And she ate that disguised healthy option, the Lunchable, the snackable, that processed crap that they eat. And one day, we're just talking to this little girl in kindergarten. She's telling me that she knows about food. Tomatoes grow in the supermarket. I said, what do you mean? She said, I saw them on the vine and the mist coming down, the sound of thunder. And I, of course, started laughing, and she started crying. She told the teacher that Mr. Tony was making fun of her. And I said, no, this can't be. So I started asking children in the lunchroom. Children don't even know what vegetables are. They can tell you a tomato and a carrot. They get fuzzy with broccoli. And we're telling them to eat healthy. What is healthy? So as fate has it, right across the street was an abandoned community garden, and then I made some phone calls. They gave me the license. I took it, cleaned it out, retrofitted it, and we planted our first load. I called the landscape company. They dumped a corner full of organic soil. I went to Home Depot, bought 400 seedlings, had 400 kids, and we had a ceremony where every child came and planted something. And lo and behold, a little light goes off when a child puts their fingers in the dirt, puts it in, and now that's theirs. That is their plant. After they plant their plant, all 400 are in the ground. From that moment forward, it was no longer, good morning, Mr. Tony. It was, Mr. Tony, did you water my plant? Is my plant growing? Every day they come and check on that plant. This is not growing. I'm growing faster than the plant. But that was in April. Late May, early June, they started to leaf, and you saw the children actually eating it. And they're seeing how delicious it was. And then they started sharing it amongst each other. And that was the beginning of Harlem Grown. We have a simple formula that if a child plants it, they will eat it, 100%. We don't even look at what it is anymore. Give them a seed, they're going to put it in. Whatever disformed, discolored thing comes out of the ground, they'll eat it. And 8 out of 10 times, they're going to tell you it's the most delicious thing they've ever had. But now what? You cannot buy what we grow there. So this is part of this vicious cycle. So long story short, we erected a hydroponic greenhouse right next door where we crank out leafy greens, kale, arugula, chard, 10,000 vegetable plants a month. Everything we grow is free of charge to the children and their families. I say free of charge and not free because that's part of the problem in the nonprofit sector. Here I am, a high school dropout, failed upwards. Remember my story? I live in Riverdale, beautiful co-op on the Hudson, and I'm going to parachute into Central Harlem to teach these parents the importance of education? Me? Really? Okay, so that's part of the problem. Nonprofits, we have great roles in this society. We have great missions. We have the passion, but our delivery is questionable at best. We really have to be more sensitive on how we deliver this service to the communities. So that's kind of the beginning. That first year, we grew 38 pounds of produce, gave it to the kids. Next day, said, hey, how was that chard? How was that kale? They said, I don't know. My mother threw it away. Mom doesn't know what it is or how to prepare it. So just think about this story I'm telling you, how we have these simple remedies for everything. We have that solution, but think about how embedded this is. This is generational poverty I'm fighting here. This mother is living like her mother and possibly the mother before her, and that is generational poverty. It's over 60 years old, and there's not one thing I could do to dent that. So what we do, we take a kind of holistic approach, and now we don't come into the community. We are the community. We're there every day with these children in school from 7 o'clock in the morning until about 6 o'clock at night. We see these children every day, 7 days a week in season. So that first year, we grew 38 pounds. This year, we grew 5,487 pounds and growing. Everything we grow is free of charge once again, and we teach the children how to cook it on the weekends and send them home with simple recipes. And in essence, we're teaching the parents through the children. It's a reverse type of education. But it doesn't stop there. The fruits and vegetables are my tool. My goal is to get these children a chance. We are trying to bridge that lack of access and lack of opportunity. How am I doing on time, David? Okay. You know, it's pretty hard trying to condense a 60-year problem in 15, 20 minutes, but I'm going to do my best. Just bear with me. So that is my tool. So now we have these farms where the kids come and they have their place. What do we do with that? Remember, access and opportunity. Go into the schools I work in and ask these children career choices. Every boy wants to be LeBron James and every girl wants to be Beyonce. That's the height of their goals. Career day in these schools are a joke. You go in there and you tell these children, be doctors, be lawyers. We might as well say, be Superman, be Batman. It's such a disconnect of what is reality to these children. Remember, access and opportunity. 80% single parent households, let that sink in. That's why they come to me like that. I am the only consistent male present who is not a disciplinarian or an administrator. Everything is changed in these communities. You can only live in a homeless shelter for 1 year. If you don't find, quote unquote, an affordable apartment, you have to go to another shelter, which is another school, another caseworker, another. There is no consistency in most of these people's lives, except us. So that's how we get our kids. People normally, this time of the story, they want to know, how do you replicate you? This is, sounds good. How do you duplicate it? I never had an answer to that until about 4 years ago, PricewaterhouseCoopers, the big accounting firm, came and they wanted to give me a check for $10,000. And at the time, that was a game changer for me. And I said, $10,000, that's great. You know, so you expect them to mail the check. No. I got 50 emails back and forth on this check presentation. I mean, if you want to give someone $10,000, you give them $10,000, right? So the day of the check presentation comes up. It's supposed to be there at 11 o'clock. 10:30, a photo crew sets up on the sidewalk. 11 o'clock, two limousines, seven guys in suits come out. They don't want to go into the garden. They don't want to meet the kids. They want my kids lined up on the sidewalk under the banner with the big foam check for the photo op. And ladies and gentlemen, that was a turning point for me as a person because I turned it down. It felt disingenuous at best. It was rushed. It was so impersonal. It was cold. That $10,000 would have been good for my organization, but that's not what I'm there for. I'm not there to raise money. I'm there to change the trajectory of these children's lives. So what does that money do to these children? So I turned it down. Didn't know why at the time. They went back downtown, called me a little ruffled, and of course, asked me, did they insult me or what happened? I said, no. And I explained, just like I said, that's not what we need. He said, what do you need? I said, I need human capital. I need people. So that in turn turned in PwC volunteers every other Saturday coming to our farm to work with my kids. And Saturdays are always the same. Tilling, weeding, 15 minutes at best. Look up, and then after 15 minutes, you see clusters of adults and my children. They're all my children, by the way, interacting. So those same kids who wanted to be LeBron and Beyonce 7 years ago today want to be CPAs, engineers, architects. They want to write code. Why? Simply, they've been exposed to it. Any given day, you can come there. I have Google on my farm. I have Aetna. We have Whole Foods. We have Juice Generation. All these big organizations, because my job is not to raise money. That is not my mission. My mission is to change the trajectory of these children's lives to give them a fighting chance. And that's what we do every day. So we have a lot of festivals. We make up these festivals because these are opportunities for our children to show off their work. We have Harvest Festival, we have June Festival, we have Festival, Saturday Festival. We just make them up. So one day one of the senior partners from PwC came, and he came with his kids from Greenwich, and he saw his employees and our kids interacting, and that turned into $1 million in pro bono consulting. So that was the best $10,000 I've ever turned down, because it turned into a pro bono consulting that they took what I just briefly described to you and gave me 3 full-time consultants over 7 months and gave me an 82-page document on how to scale my work. So how do I replicate me? We work with Police Athletic League, Harlem Justice Corps, and other court-involved organizations, and we hire young men from the community, all 17 to 24. They've all dropped out of high school, and they've all been arrested. They intern on our farm. We use farm chores as workforce development. Because, ladies and gentlemen, everyone wants to work, but everyone doesn't know how to work. Simple things like be on time, pull your pants up, make eye contact, use your words instead of your hands when you communicate. Simple things we think everyone knows. These young men are the same kids that I work with in school. They're just 10 years older. They same population, the same statistics I gave you. We also hire single mothers. We pay them $15 an hour and up to be greenhouse managers. But then we run into another unique situation. You hear all the rhetoric on the news. The news is very depressing these days. And we have these ideas of our poor people. One thing, we always say those people and them. What's wrong with them? We never ask what happened to them. Some of the stories behind these bouts with homelessness and dependency are pretty sobering. I mean, there's a story behind everything. There's nothing wrong with them. Something happened to them. So, did you know the federal poverty level is $24,876? Think about that, $24,876, right? Here's a mom, a child or two. To get her benefits, you have to be beyond that, below that. So we're paying $15 an hour. My staff have to monitor the hours to keep them below the threshold, because if you surpass it by $1, they cut all your benefits. Your benefits aren't reduced. It's a cliff. You lose it. So any kind of government help, food stamps, medical, Section 8 housing for rent subsidies is gone. Anybody here can live on $24,876 a year? I can't. These are things that I'm learning. Because I, like most of you, I assume, we see this every day, but you don't see it. We read it, but we turn the page to another horrible story, and this is what's happening with us. And ladies and gentlemen, I rarely speak in churches. I speak all over the country. Harlem Grown has done that for me. It gives me an opportunity to speak all over the country, and it's usually to foundations, universities, or these big corporate boardrooms, and I speak. it's very rarely that I get into a church. And it's so ironic, if you think about it, and you think about Dave, what he said today. Jesus was born in a manger on a dirt floor. His whole time on this earth was working with the poor, the destitute, those without. What happened to us that they turn to those and them? Is that who we are? So anyway, I know I got to wrap it up, but I implore anyone here to please come visit us. It's only a few minutes from here in time. And let me tell you, Harlem is not unique. You have the same thing right here in somewhere in this area. I'm not too familiar with this town or the town where you live, but the other side of whatever town you live in, there's a little Harlem. I guarantee it. And it is within our power to change that. It's not always money. Trust me. Like me turning down that $10,000, it turned into $1 million of pro bono consulting that gave me the wherewithal to scale this thing to where it is today. I have 22 staff members, almost a $2 million budget, all within 7 years, because now I have this infrastructure. But my mission has never changed. I am not in the fundraising business. I'm standing before you. I would prefer you to come to my farm and work with these kids and cut me a check. The check is the easy way out for us. That's our conscious cleanser. We're all doing okay in our own little spheres in the world. And it's easy to cut a check. But if you think about it, what have we really done by cutting that check if we're trying to change something? So my change is you. It's people coming, working with these kids who don't even know you exist in a capacity of another caring, compassionate human being who's not judging, who's not disciplining, or not telling them what to do. We have a simple rule in my company. Page 1, sentence 1 on our employment manual. Never tell a child, wait a minute, can't you see I'm busy, or I'll get back to you. They get that everywhere else in their life, except here. So thank you, and I hope to see you guys up there soon. Trust me, you'll love it. You'll love it. These children are amazing. They make you really appreciate life. And whatever we're doing, I think we can do it a little better. All right? Thank you so much.
Well, I hope that got you excited. I was over there, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, and just seeing everything that Tony's doing was just amazing. And I am excited to announce that we are, as Awaken, as a church, we are going to be visiting Harlem Grown sometime in May. So we're still working on the date there, but May is our target date for us to go, to visit, to see what's happening down there, to be a presence. And I think that's the biggest thing that Tony was talking about. It's not just about the check, it's about our physical, bodily presence. And that's what Jesus was all about. Spending time with people, being present in people's lives, being present in the midst of the pain or the lack of access that people had. And that's one of the big things that we believe here at Awaken. How can we be a healing presence for people around us? How can we be a healing presence for the world? How can we be a conduit of God's grace, God's mercy? How can we tangibly show God's love to people? Let's not just talk about it, because if we're just going to talk about it on a Sunday morning, what's the point of having a church? What's the point of what we do here on a Sunday morning if we're not going to actually go and live it out? If we're not going to actually go put some flesh on these words, these things that we say we believe? Sometimes it's really nice to talk about things, and we have great arguments and ways to defend those arguments in our head, but then our lives don't look anything like what it is that we're spouting about, what it is we believe. So how are we doing this here at Awaken? I have a slide, if we go to the next slide. As I said, in May, we're going to be going down to Harlem Grown, so hopefully we'll have that date ironed out this week. Info will be in the newsletter, all the different ways to sign up. And then also, April 22nd, it's a Sunday, we are going to be taking our entire Sunday morning service, and we are going to be making sock bundles. Now, what a sock bundle is some of you have done this before. A sock bundle is taking a sock, filling it with toiletries, and then those sock bundles will be distributed to local homeless shelters here in Westchester. So we are going to take our, we believe so much in this that we are going to take our entire Sunday morning service on the 22nd. The kids will be joining us, and we are going to be bundling socks so that those who do not have access will have just some of the basic necessities that we often take for granted. So we'll be talking more about that next week, how you can get involved, ways to participate, some of the supplies that we're looking for. And then one final question for us here this morning. How are you embracing your God-given responsibility to seek after the flourishing of all creation? I get it. We're all in different seasons. We all have different resources. We can't all go and start our own organization. But is there a cause that you truly believe in? Is there a cause that inspires you? Is there a cause that you say, this is wrong and something needs to be done about it? Is there a way in which you can support that cause? Maybe you can volunteer your time a couple times a year. Maybe along with that, and I think Tony put it in a great way, yes, resources are important, financial resources are important, but is there a way that you can also be present to what it is that that organization is doing? And then also just being mindful about how you treat the people that you come in contact with on a regular daily basis. Are you seeing this God-given image that is within every single person? Are you honoring that image? Are you just paying lip service to it? Are you actually honoring this fact, this truth, that we have all been birthed with the divine image? So those are a couple ways that we're doing that here at Awaken, a couple things for us to think about, for us to truly embrace our humanity, who it is that God has created each one of us to be. Let me pray here for us this morning. God, I thank you for the immense value, the infinite worth that you see within each one of us. God, this value that has been breathed into every single person. So God, I pray that we do not take that truth lightly. God, I pray that we do not neglect that truth, but that we would be a people, God, that we would be a community that takes seriously this belief. God, your intent for each one of us to take responsibility for this creation that we've been placed in. God, I pray that we would be known, God, here at this church, but also the church globally would be known for people who seek after the thriving and the flourishing of all people and all creation. God, maybe not just talk about it, but may we actually put flesh on the words of Jesus. May we actually go and show love and compassion to all people. So I pray that, God, may you continue to be with Tony, with his work. God, may you continue changing lives of the people who are impacted by Harlem Grown. God, may people have access to education. May they have access to food. May they be able to move forward into the intent, the destiny that you have for every single person. And may we here at Awaken be able to partner with organizations in our area in order to ensure that all people have access to things that we simply take for granted. So we ask all this. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.